Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film screening of This Changes Everything, Tuesday, February 9th, 6:30 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center Auditorium in Portland. This Changes Everything is a film directed by Avi Lewis and inspired by Naomi Klein's international bestseller of the same title that attempts to reimagine the vast challenge of climate change.
I've spent 6 years wandering through the wreckage caused by the carbon in the air and the economic system that put it there.
There will also be information and representatives from local groups involved in the climate change struggle. Again, that's Tuesday, February 9th, 6:30 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center Auditorium, 7688 Southwest Capitol Highway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Winter Folk 28, a celebration of music, community, and service on February 20th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Winter Folk, an annual benefit for Sisters of the Road, will feature singer-songwriter, author, and social activist David Roth, headlining along with performers Casey Neal, Sky in the Road, Dan Weber, and Kelly Bosworth. Again, that's Winter Folk 28 on February 20th, from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Talking Earth. This is Patrick Bocard. I have a full show tonight. I am here with poets from the New Poet Challenge, which is a very interesting reading series. It's been going on for about a year now. I think they're going to have an anniversary, and I'm going to kind of step out of the way and let the host, Amanda Coxstrom-Hellstrom-White, tell you all about it. And she has six other poets with her, and I'm stepping out of the way now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Amanda Cochran-Hellstrom-White, and I'm the host of New Poet Challenge. And we have our reading the first Tuesday of every month at the Pairings Portland Wine Shop, which is at 455 Northeast 24th Avenue, which is basically Northeast 24th and Gleason. And with me tonight, I have six poets. Nancy Deer, Amy Tron, Lee Schutzlein, Keturah Carter, Sarah McKay, and Megan St. Marie. And I'm going to do a little bit of explanation about what New Poet Challenge is and how it works, and then introduce the poets a little bit more, and then they're going to read some poetry. And then I'll talk a little bit more about pairings. So what New Poet Challenge is I had this idea that my husband and I host another poetry reading called Word Warriors, and I said that I thought it was really great that we had this poetry reading, but I wanted to see more people, newer people, and I thought it would be really interesting to see if we could help people find their voices. And I thought, what if we took these people that we know that are poets and said, you know people, challenge them to do poetry. And so I said, let's have this reading and see how it goes. And I said, we'll take an existing poet and we'll say, dare your friends to come and write something, whether it's like a haiku or a refrigerator magnet poetry or something, or if they, you know, secretly blog poetry in their, you know, in their spare time and they want to read it in front of other people. And then if they really, really love it, we can help them go to our other reading series or help them try to get published or do something else. And it's been really successful. And as Patrick said, we're going to have our 1 year anniversary next month, which is really exciting. We've had about 50 or 60 poets come through, and I'd say probably 3/4 of them have wanted to do it again, which is good. And it's helpful that we're in a really great wine shop where the owner is super supportive. Jeffrey is fantastic, and he's actually been a challenger poet and a challengee. So he's, you know, it's been great. So I'm going to get started and actually get some poetry going. Our first poet is going to be Megan St. Marie. And Megan was actually our very first challengee poet. And she was challenged by a great person named Erica Mitchell. And Megan was the very first person to come up and try this for me and make my ID a reality. And so Megan is going to read some of her poetry.
Okay, this is called The Gift. A constant companion, she is with me always. Shared when I feel inclined and safe, a precious gift I revere. Made fun of, ridiculed, and belittled by the whole of our collected village, still she stands strong in her divine birthright to be the keeper of knowledge and the bringer to the light. She incites fear, wars, and jealousy over her innate powers, but is always soft, yielding, and compassionate. Men are tempted to regulate and own her, but she is a free spirit, listening only to the whispers of love. I share her, but she is not yours. You don't own my vagina. Thank you.
Our next, sorry.
Amanda, may I interject? Because I discovered which is the evil mic, and it is not the one that we just thought it was.
Okay, which one is it?
It is the red one. So the red one is acting weird.
Okay.
So we're if you could just adjust everything like
accordingly.
Yes, okay. That would be great.
All right, we will do
and that. I'll come in the room and make sure it works, okay?
Okay, that right. Sounds great. Our next poet is going to be Nancy Deer. And Nancy was challenged by Mary Bond. And so Nancy is going to read some of her poems, or one of her poems now.
So this is a poem called My Father's House. My hardline atheist father, a Coca-Cola Santa Claus, white hair, white beard, pink skin, started mornings stretching on the porch in his tidy whiteies, even in Oklahoma winter. He told us, his two children, that he sold the house we grew up in to Jehovah's Witnesses that appeared with a briefcase full of cash. When I was 6, I snuck through the closet, a trapdoor to the pantry, sent by Nana's smirk for dreamsicles before dinner. Generics, too pale orange, not pale enough white. A box that screamed in yellow, saving money is done by spending it. She had abandoned him more than once, but the little money she made in the parking lot liquor shop, its name I never knew, just that it stung in the mouths of miners whispering her location at tailgates, it paid some of the toppled mortgage, a legacy left behind in every closet of the house that she left to him, royal purple bags with golden cords around their throats. Soon after dinner, she was dead and in a hole bigger than 5 of me. I knew I was supposed to cry, but I couldn't make it come out of me. Instead, I watched his face, also tearless, a sorrow so dusty that it tamped out his rage. 3 crack houses, 12 broken down cars, 3 terrifying dogs. The bloodstain, 1 block over, that stuck through the first hard rain. We weren't allowed out after dark. I don't know if he grew up there, if the ghost that rattled the windows and opened the kitchen door so much that he took it off its hinges were the same ones that visited his own fitful child's sleep. She left him a darkness, whispers in the framing, a slow leak of confidence out cheaply insulated walls, the buzz of old alcohol soaking the carpet like gasoline. He will leave me only his ashes. I don't know what it will feel like to fight my brother, a doctor of other people's histories, over the confusion brought by the death of a man who has bought both burial plot and cremation. His death will be easy. I'll pull the plug. I know, because he asked me. I will be the only one who knows to commit his body to the oven. I will never put him in the ground. I will never look down at him in a hole the same size as me. Those ashes I will scatter under the seats of every airport, every train station, bus, and ferry. I will lightly dust the maps in every bookstore with traces of his bones. I will send him off post-Viking, flames the ends of fingertips, his raft the soles of shoes. The last 8 ounces, wrapped in brown paper, sent off to a factory where if I pay enough, they will send him back to me in a velvet-corded bag. Now, a pressed jewel, aquamarine, a stone the same color as his eyes, that I will have implanted under my tongue. And then maybe I can tell myself the story of how he really escaped that house. Foreclosure, failed arson, the moment where you're supposed to turn into the driveway, but instead keep driving and never go back.
Our next reader is Sarah McKay, and Sarah's challenger was Leah Rayner.
Okay, this is the first poem I read. it has an epigraph by John O'Donohue. Close your eyes. Gather all the kindling about your heart to create one spark. That is all you need to nourish the flame that will cleanse the dark of its weight of festered fear. By his poem, For Courage. I would open my body to you. It can be your home. Those are hard to come by, I know. I've gathered the tools. I don't look like much, but I am ready for you. I know homes from ruins and all the crumbling between, how they sometimes look the same for so long, but friend. With the dark hollows, the aching chest, pockets worry-laden, I will build you a nest. A hobbit hole, a badass fairy fort. I will be the tallest tree, the shire itself, the living room made magical. I would pull back the blanket of skin wrapping my body and fold you inside. I've been told it is thin, but it has always kept me warm. I would wrap my limbs around you. Like roots binding the earth, hold you firm until all your pieces remember their places, fit snug to each other's curves. Remember that they belong. I'll make sure the hearth is stoked high. You have time to gather your kindling. Fill your lantern body with a light you can read by. Shine slivers of life through all your cracks. Remind other weary seeking bodies what cracks are for. If you allow, I would hold your head to my chest until your heart learns a tattoo to guide your feet, a rhythm of certainty, your blood beating so steadily, always swinging back to center, always knowing there is time to get where you are going. I know you cannot stay. You will twist, shift, chafe, pushing with pointiest bits of elbows and knees. It's tiresome to be held so close. What I really mean to say is that I do not know how to keep you safe. History is always being made. Some bodies collect scars like bookmarks. Others are clean slate blessings of forgetting. But friend, little one, I am broken. Sort of like you, we are broken just like humans, guiding each other. My spark is still borrowed some days, but all you need is one. I have some to spare. I only know how to hold you. You may not be ready for a home, and that is all right. I will be here, building. There might be cracks, never fear. I'll leave on a light.
Our next poet is Lee Schetzlein, and Lee was challenged by his mom, Andrea.
This poem doesn't have a title. Just now awake. Every end open to find me, crawl out to find nothing. My task today is to make an unwashed home for that disembodied voice no one yet put a jar around. Lucky for it, that non-part of existence. This next line of questioning is directed at nothing, not to be answered. How many teeth do you have left? How many of you have teeth left? What was the first thing you'd been told you couldn't remember? What was the first thing you can remember not being told? Who is the first one to say fear is an object? Why is joy a taste? Where is here in yesterday's context? Is now ever yet? If no one's taught me nothing, I'll walk away now, so to as to start throwing water at the sky, shouting about retribution. Grab a bucket and a cloud. A cloud told me justice is just a reflection. Told me it'd never be the dog I said it was. Turn the head you don't have to look at yourself. Turn yourself you don't have to look at you. Not every matchbook is a clue in a movie. This movie is about a white male protagonist. You know the one. It has credits at the end. A side character dies. I said if houses grew like trees, no one would need hands. You said, but explain, my window's too high to kick. I said, to limit your teeth to chewing's a houseless act. You talked from then with only them, saying, clack, clack, clack of teeth. I said, not above it. Think the same way a man cries in public. You said, clack, 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 clack of teeth. I said, for now, yes, but a house can burn if you love it enough.
And our next reader is Keturah Carter, and Keturah was challenged by Interblank.
This poem is called Phoenix, and it's basically about my life and relationships and lack thereof. Phoenix. I have been broken by the words of many, my heart scorched and burned, my soul thrust out from my aching chest, my screams for love silenced by fear. The scars from words, the lasting scars from hands, will never be washed away. I tried to conquer the fear. I've tried to conquer the anger. I've tried to conquer the tears. I run from my own story. I've learned that lesson before. My pain is my shadow, never having been in love, or no one ever having been in love with me. I had to learn how to fall just to be free. I stopped running, and I cast my body, all of myself, into the open flames. I let it burn, all of me. The tears, pain, agony, screams, the scars, the bruises, and the words. I let it all burn, and I was consumed by the fire. There is nothing left, not even a whisper. Yet, I did awake. I did rise from the ashes. As I thrust my arms to the sky, I reached for the stars. I was anew. There is nothing left of the broken woman from before the fire. For I am grateful for those flames that washed away that battered, broken heart. I have risen, and now I shine. I don't have to run. Fear lives here no more. Now I dance, now I sing. Now I can be joyful. Now I can love and be loved. I can be held, I can be kissed. I can just be. I have come out of the ashes. I am born again. No stains of yesterday, no fear of tomorrow. Just me, now free.
And our last reader that I'm going to introduce is Amy Tryon. And Amy was challenged by Stephanie Nelson.
Hi, I'll be reading Stephanie Nelson's work here. I was so honored to have her challenge me as a new poet, and this is a piece of her work. So it's called My Heart by Stephanie M. Nelson. I promise to honor and protect your truth, your wisdom, your beauty, and to keep you open and energized to the full of life. Heartbreak is always a choice. Betrayed by myself, once again, I choose to turn the key to finally listen to my own heart's reality. She speaks truth, spreads wisdoms, beats with passionate desire, and wants to spread love like a fucking wildfire. My heart is my gift from the soul, an instrument that can play only my song if I am courageous enough to sing along. And I will sing loud, for there's no shame in doing whatever I must to see through all that is crumbling in the dust. As I dance and sing along, my world is a musical place of rhythm and harmony, a new and open interface. Be still, my beating heart. Your song is playing now.
So I'm going to talk just a little bit more, and then I'm going to just let these guys read their poetry. So I just wanted to go a little bit into... So when I first had this idea, I approached Jeffrey at Pairings and said, hey, I have this idea, and can I use your space? And he was like, sure, why not? And Pairings is this great shop. It's the most interesting wine shop in Portland, I think. And it's interesting because Jeffrey is fantastic, but it's also interesting because he's got great quality product, but he also makes it fascinating. Because rather than just saying, I'm going to pair this wine with this food, which he does do, he also says, I'm going to describe a word, and you can describe a word, and we'll pair wine to it. And so last month, we did like a little game where people sent in adjectives to describe me, which was fun. And then he paired wines to me, which, you know, was kind of fun. So my favorite of all of those was my husband, Curtis, described me as bubbly, strong, full-bodied, complex, and fun. And so Jeffrey paired me with a wine called Uncle Dick's Sparkling Shiraz, which was a sparkling red wine, which I'd never had sparkling red wine before, and it tastes just like that, really, and it was fantastic. And so, and he's really great about doing things like that. Like right now, he's doing pairings for the Oscars with the best actresses and actors and the movies and things like that. And it's just a great shop. And I think that one of the benefits, I think, of having it at that shop, besides the fact that it's fantastic, is it gives the readers, if they're a little nervous, they can have a little wine to, you know, relax. And but I'm really, really happy with how everybody has responded and how, you know, it's been, because I want, part of my thing about the poetry community in Portland is that, you know, traditionally it's been kind of a sausage fest, and no offense, Lee. And, and so, you know, and that's been a big goal of Curtis's with his other reading series and with Word Warriors, is to try to get more women and more, you know, diversity in the community. And so that's been a goal of mine too. And so that's what I've been doing, is trying to get more women and more people of color and, you know, and more LGBT people and stuff like that through the doors and answer, you know, things like that. So, and that's, I think it's been successful, but I really think you guys should come and check it out. Like I said, our 1 year anniversary is next month, and we're going to have a really fantastic show, but I'm going to let these lovely poets get back to sharing their work with you and stop babbling. So here we go. Here's Megan.
Okay, this piece is called Souls Diverge. You are always on your own path, arriving 3.5 weeks late. I watched as a heavyset nurse straddled the table above me in sumo wrestling pose, and after much resistance, uncorked you from my body through a small, deep cut. There are no signs of fetal distress. But how can three days and nights of labor create no distress on either side? There was physical distress, and on many levels, the psychic pain of agonizing separation. Adjusting was hard, turning grunts into words to be better understood, banging your head to unlock the small bones that surround your fontanelle, your intuition knowing how best to help. Did you make new friends at camp, I ask? No, Mama, I don't let people into my heart very often. But once they're in there forever. You answer from the back seat of my Toyota. Oh, my dear child, you are so screwed, I hear my brain whisper. Out loud I say, well, those of us in there are sure lucky. As hormones saturate your brain, I think back to these words and hope to hell they are true.
Okay, so this poem is called, Oh Brother. When I stepped off the plane 24 hours from my front door to meet him in the suitcase holding his material life, he said, face flat, serious, you have an addiction and it's going to hurt. He was talking about my mainline of caffeine and the number of euros it would take to keep me in coffee. But for a moment, I wondered what he knew that I didn't. Before the last time, when I could not decipher spaghetti sauce from blood, there was the first time I ever threw up on purpose. It was after he said, you sound like a pig when you're eating. We'd abandoned my mother then. We're old enough to tell the court that I, the youngest, wanted to cross to the wrong side of the tracks to live in our father's house. Maybe the year or the week before, we stood in the flat dead grass of the backyard, fenceless. Clapboard stairs stumbling in pieces from the back door, the shed half painted, half leaned against the neighbor's fence, held up really by the fig tree. The chunk of concrete I'm still convinced was poured over someone's dead baby. Next to the plot where one year my father's obsession was a garden he tended haphazard until it failed to yield anything of measure and he got bored. It was there, in the center of things decayed, abandoned, hidden in plain sight, where he, my sweet-faced brother, said, if you keep mixing drugs like this, you're going to die. Like that wasn't already a potential outcome. Like I wasn't testing the edges to see where they lie.
Okay, this is called Waking, or Missoula 2013. There is a town in Montana. Keeper of the year, I only did things right. Year at the brink, a thing smoldering, burnt down to new beginning. Like all places, this one is made of so many mistakes, was not built on only the good or eccentric. It fumbles earnestly. Year of borrowed homes, of molting, of leaving when I had meant to stay. It was the year of tears loosed readily into the seams of tectonic plates, flannel sheets, flesh, and memory. Into mugs of hot water because it was free, of ailments cured best by gin or fireball whiskey. After a few months, the living room reeked of close-kept bodies and silent heartbreaks, so I washed it in sage, but each breath insisted we'd only reset the break. We're hurt just so much as to ensure proper healing, always more painful than we are ever taught it will be. It was the year of make-believe and of speaking only true things. A child's reconciling of impossibilities, of falling in love with something other than a girl on the other side of the country, of learning the smell of sweetgrass can darn souls back into serviceability, and falling to pieces, soundest vessel in a fleet in the midst of a hurricane. Urgent whispering, here, I know the way to safety, trust me. that year, I learned a raccoon can tear life from a body. No thought for necessity, it will leave a gruesome landscape, steeped, still, and glistening. Conjured, vibrant, fragility, painting the world awake, painting the precipice between existence and oblivion, a rampage. Discovered early on a midwinter day, you will scoop up the feathers. The shattered bones, frozen to the hay, pile them into a black bag and pray over a reminder that most things end before anyone is ready. The last night I remember, I straddled a rooftop. An ending straddled a heartbeat like a footfall before the second landing, propelled by just the knowledge of something else on the way, inhaled a sunset beside a girl I missed already and could promise nothing, and looked out over our city, pleading, is it time now to forget? This body, it has finally discovered wanting this lesson. I could give it all back this year. Too soon, it will be nothing more than a memory of once knowing I'd existed.
This one actually does have a title. It's inspired by, the title itself is inspired by this poem I like a lot. The poem's called To Graham Faust on the Morning of His 40th Birthday. Graham Faust is the name of the person who wrote it. So this is called To Lee Schetzlein on the Morning of His 22nd Birthday. Now that you've decided to start this year like every other day of it, you realize treating every year like a deadline is a good way of procrastinating your own existence. A deadline's the point in time at which something becomes meaningless. Catching yourself on fire, you realize this is a decent hobby for people with skin. Imagine, you'd said, if they made houses out of skin, so I thought of you. Not one for metaphors. I'm relying on you to literally be on fire. This bed gave birth to you. You're a nightmare. This bed's the side of my face I'm fine with not coming out of for weeks. 7 days later is a week. Not that anyone's counting, but I've won. If you'd like, we'll do literally nothing forever. And just how long till I get to become that void I'm staring at? Soon, you'll say. Or maybe you won't. Either way, I'm ready to believe you. Right now, you're happy about lying about being happy or alone. Soon, you'll be alone. Happy about lying about being happier. Asking what you'd do with three wishes, you said her, twice, pointing at only one person. Said die, once, explaining how to fit the entire world's cocaine supply into a single room. After reading three books by Kafka, you realize knowing what Kafkaesque means is overrated. You've lost all hope of using it in a conversation, but the point at which you finally do will be much more landmark than anything you've ever dry-humped in public to get a unique profile picture. You once smiled at the sun like it was proud of your teeth. Now your mouth's mostly full of rain, and you really are proud of your teeth. My heart's beating like it's blowing at a small ember in your hands. Your hands are a small ember burning out at my heart. I'm the kind who answers, what time is it, by turning into a clock. You're the kind to say instead, it's all a construct, before peeling yourself like a cold grape. Soon we'll both perfect being bowls full of what couldn't be scraped off of us. For now, that blank book I wrote, Notes on Futility, should be enough to sustain you. I only hope it's looking at the blank pages that turns you blind, not the way you lick your fingers to turn them. A fallacy. I'm ready for anything. A fact. Neither are you. A story. A tree falls in the woods. Three people die. It still doesn't make a sound. A concept. Me in the dirt. The warmth of the sun radiates through the loose earth. I smell only beautiful things. A rock scratches just where I want it to, and nothing really moves. Finally, there is no longer a need for music.
This poem is called Proud. Basically, it's based on my belief system about black and white should be in a box with the rest of the crayons, and we should be celebrated for our cultures. This is proud. Oftentimes when I meet someone new, they ask me, what are you? And I smile because who I am is proud. When I look at myself in the mirror, I don't see a color. I see a great nations, a multitude of culture, the beauty of the world, and I am proud. Cultures came together to love one another, and here I am. I am proud to be me. I am covered with a past full of nations who fought bravely for each other. They fought bravely to live, and they fought bravely to love. I come from nations of warriors, though I am not sad that they've all but perished. I am not angry because they died on their feet. I am not filled with fury for the millions of lives that were lost. I am proud to have the blood of a wolf, brave and loyal, honorable. Who I see when I look in the mirror is a person, a woman, a warrior. I was born with heart disease, and who I am is a woman who fights just to live my life. I've learned it from them, my ancestors, my blood, the gift of love, the gift of peace, the gift of life. I shall carry it with me always, so close to my heart, and I will live with my head held, with my head held high. As I walk this land and take the hands of my billions of brothers and sisters, and they will know my love, they will know my peace, they will know my heart, and I will love them, all of them. Fear has no home here, nor anger or remorse, nor fury or pain, for it was them who taught me to fight bravely and fight to love, fight for love, unconditionally. I've learned those lessons from many nations of lovers. Who I see when I look in the mirror is a child of lovers and a lover herself, and for that I am proud.
This piece is called The Aquarian Brother. Happy Lunar New Year from the Tran family. Happy Chinese and Vietnamese New Year. Maybe the coral of the sea kept our secret, preserved innocence and the rite of passage. Freedom set sail and it rung up a story of those thousand ships that come about a love story. These mermaid 60s are real, just separated however many universal degrees. See, the sea that came together for us Pisceans, ruler of mystery and emotion. Much of it has to do with timing, the coming together of shipmates mating in the months of birthdays. Mayday, mayday, here comes the ship's load. Hurrying in preparation to dock up, the captain soon heard from her sisters, maidens, you're having a baby girl, it's true. Quickly, the crewmate set sail to set their captain home, home to take his journey anew. His girl comes. She's one of the water people, like us, a part of the travel. His boat, the land of the refugee. Escape, now, go be free. His woman mate cradled notes for months and had no clue that a baby girl would be new age Piscean, a delicate era, a new era as happy as they could be. Father Time shares, she may be the one that preserves the history, however it must be, it will be, and the Aquarian brother will venture together with her to play in harmony. This time, a time for Pisces, says the captain of the sea. Veer towards the west coast. There are people there who plays and dances to the music. Let's go see. The boy who fishes with his dad always wondered what'll happen next when he hears a story about the thousand ships. He thinks of his life. Could this be?
This is a piece about a creepy man that I met in Mexico. It's called El Diablo Juan. Flat black eyes, one blind since birth, the other just as scary. An unreadable fortress behind which vestiges of cruelty leak oily through veneer joints. You speak about your daughters, how you prefer the one that looks like you, verbally tormenting the older one that resembles her mother. Tonight you casually mentioned that you hit two dogs with your car. Were they okay, I ask? Who cares? They're street dogs and they were fighting. The horror movie scene in my head begins, and instinct kicks in as I shut my mouth.
pushing the automatic garage door control down around my heart to the closed position. Definitions of sociopath float through my primitive brain, and I assume autopilot mode. A small voice inside me warns, "Act normally as you dab at the oil with a cloth."
So today is my birthday, but that also means that also means that it is the birthday of my beloved cat, Chicken Pot Pie, which means now you get to hear a poem about my cat. My inside voice wants to tell you about the number of bones a cat has, 245, and the sound her tendons will make crackling in the fire after she dies. That, like all my loved ones, I intend to have her turned to gemstone, peridot, and smoky quartz. My outside voice wants to tell you about how her paws are tiny teddy bears, and when she's happy, she smells just like cinnamon toast. And I am sure she was sent from space and has been blogging for years and sending back recon, but has since defected and relaxed instead into her life of not quite luxury. My inside voice wants to tell you that, like every creature made dependent by need or choice, I will care for her body until sick is too sick, until my bank account and my heartstrings concede that it is time for her to die. My outside voice is pressed to ramble on how she is so alien and so clever, but always textbook cat. That once she opened a drawer and dug out a box of catnip and tore open the cardboard and then the plastic and then made cat angels on the kitchen floor. How she rubs her face in cigarette ashes like nothing could be more delicious. How one time she spread those same ashes and butts all over my apartment, doing perfect Aikido somersault rolls into the blue glass Last Supper ashtray until I caught her and she pretended to be sleeping. All of me wants to tell you how she'll lick the salt off of Pringles and corn chips like a tiny deer. She won't bite them herself. She'll only eat them if I break them into proper bite-sized pieces. That she will dive face first into a bowl of marinara and not come up for air until the bowl is shining. And one time figured out how to open the full-size refrigerator door just to chomp on celery. My inside voice is piecing a prayer that she will never die. That selfish, I will go before she does. That a feline lifetime of cheap and varied food, popcorn and boiled chicken when I was too poor, doesn't take her first. My grape ape, my chicky loo, my grumpiest slug. All of me wants to tell you how she can give a glance that is all side-eye, like when I try to tell her dad jokes or get her to appreciate my tiny dances. How when she had an accidental teen pregnancy, she abandoned the box I made for her in the closet, decided the safest place in the whole world was with me in bed, waking me up to the tiny squeak of newborn kitten, nearly squashed by my slumbering shift. How her belly is softer than chinchilla down, and I'm the only one who knows, though many slashed palms have tried. My inside voice wants to tell you always that she saved my life, that keeping her alive has kept me alive, that I am filled with drunken monologues about the ocean of love I feel for this little beast that taught herself how to operate doorknobs and runs away every once in a while to terrorize the neighborhood, sunning herself in dappled shade for weeks, but always comes home. For 12 years, she has come home. For her, I will always come home. But my inside voice, smaller than kitten squeak, says, Where's home someday? Without her? What do I do when she is only a body? Will 245 bones turned peridot contain her rumbled raspy purr, the sparkle of drool in her smile, the paw tucked under cheek, the bubble and mew of her snore, the love beamed from here to her home planet, always, always staying, when all she had to do was open the door.
The first line of this poem is borrowed from a short story by Sherman Alexie called The Sin Eaters. Memory is a church on fire. Let's begin at the end. With the burning pews, finger pads, palms, sweet soft backs of hands rested, upturned, foreheads pressed, elbows in service to tiny drooping heads, dark wood oiled by faithful and faithless, rising spectral from the blackened hulls. Let's begin. After I give back the house key and the sweatshirt, pretend I have forgotten the custody agreed for the books on the nightstand and that I don't still wear that necklace low enough to feel it beside my heartbeat. The day I buy a new spare toothbrush, just in case, after the tight knot of unease found its home nestled beneath my breastplate, its pithy voice spitting bile and insecurity and bargaining. Your handwriting will curl from the mouth of a metal trash bin. It will seem eternity, ritual cleansing or else housekeeping. Always sweep the basin clockwise, right to left, always turn the other direction. I'll wish those ashy sentences had burned less readily. Put up some sort of a fight, had a little faith, but the way they flutter fall, there's awe in that at least. The day the hymnals hum final rites into the bent spine of sanctuary now brought to resting place, now smoke and burial shroud, after in the soft cradle of your neck there was discovered holy ground. After Sherman Alexie, this is not that. This is book of matches deep in pocket, gas can in trunk. This is the inhalation of breath, the response too quick. This is the extra foot of space wondering if it has yet served its purpose. Let the moment pass modestly, or if it will be dismissed, given a new mission, a magic trick, revoked existence. This is laces tied in that strange manner, both brusque and hesitant, the boot that thinks of treading the path of intention and not of the blood beating a rally cry in blushing ears and throat to abandon course, crawl back into her bed. The heart pounding, body quaking, should have told you I needed you, should have sucked that need from your half-asleep lips, should have curled into the cold frame of your body and asked you to hold all of this potential fruition, but didn't. This is the bounce of the first step, announcing you have crossed a threshold. It does not know what you hold in your hands, only waits, watches, hold space for the moment before decisiveness. This is remembering the choking, the blackness, the desire to rush in and save the nativity from last year's arsonist, heart-cracking ribs, witnesses. This is the moment before the moment anything has been born, died, resurrected. The moment, I say, do you smell something burning? And you reply, lovely. Why are you always imagining us a tragedy?
All right. I'm going to try to read one that isn't serious at all, so don't take this seriously, please. I'm try to read it. This is how to be cool. Step one, lose sense of time. Lock yourself in a garage with no windows that has two TVs that play different things. Have limited water. Have friends that you tell you to buy you malt and even still cheaper booze. Listen to nonstop talk of the grade of tits in strip clubs and a dollar pour for a tall boy all day happy hour hours. If you have or had a phone or a clock, hide it. If you have or had a sundial or set of fingers, set it or them in front or in between one or two of the TVs so it or them always tells close to the same two times. Never, not even for a moment, look at them. Step two, watch your elders. Step 2A, watch an old man walk an ugly dog with a bag of shit in his hand. Step 2B, come to one or two safe conclusions about why the man has shit in his hands. Step 2C, come to exactly two, 2CI and 2CII, unsafe conclusions and write them on the bottoms of separate chairs in an IKEA warehouse store. 2CI, the man needs to throw shit at somebody nearby. 2CII, the man has a collection, a stockpiled shit supply. Step 2D, reference and annotate your secret shit propaganda. Step 3, go different places. Go someplace you, do not belong you, will make yourself unknown you, will develop a cult non-following. Step 4, prepare for your death. Lie constantly. Anything unimportant can be lied about. Now any moment you die, you'll be sure to get you your spot in hell. Step 5, just don't. Don't let yourself age, and don't stop for anything, and do not say goodbye.
This one is called An Abundant Love, and this is basically dedicated to my future and my future love. I am not like the other women. I am not a pearl, a diamond, or glitter. I am not a Tiffany jewel or a pile of cash. I am me. I am a burning star full of fire, full of passion. High in the night sky is where I soar. Where there are no boundaries, no limits to my love or passion. I write this letter to you. I write to you, my friend, the friendly moon. Dear friend, I wish I could love as a child loves. Unchained, unconditional, holy and full of passion. I wish I could live as a child lives. To see the world as a place to love. With great imagination and everything is a journey. And furthermore, I want to live life on the edge of insanity. In the mind of madness. In the heart of all stars. Give me my cabin, and I'll give you my love. Keep me surrounded in trees. Let me be swallowed up by the ancient roots at the heart of the earth, and I shall live abundantly off the love and the land. Let me move and sway like the waters of the oceans, and I shall be part of the earth. Let me tell you, my dear friend, I am not like any other woman. I do not go after the wallet size of a man. I go after his heart. I don't want a penthouse. Give me that cabin. Forget expensive jewels. Write me a love letter so I can fill your heart, and we will live in abundance until the end of all time.
This poem is called Silver Heart. For all the fun time and adventure time at Silver Falls State Park in Oregon. Awesome place. Silver Heart. It was heartfelt, calming, and refreshing. Silver line of the masculine, feminine. Divine heart of the downfall. Shallow water, deep through the woods, my heart echoed. Stood in time, pushing to stop, then go. Rest the soul. Manifest the reboot of human mystery. Eyes dreary, misty healer, heart dealer. Green rock held and shadows clearer. By the way, the look from it here looks so much more lighter. I am one with nature, I am one with water, and I am one with family. Sun nourished and water flourished.
Okay, so I'm going to close it out with talking a little bit about the next show real quick. So our anniversary show is going to be Tuesday, March 1st from 6 to 8 p.m. And again, it's at the Pairings Portland Wine Shop at 455 Northeast 24th Avenue at 24th and Gleason. And our readers, our challenger poets are going to be Cachet Kilson Anderson, Cachet the Hug Dealer. He's awesome. Sarah McKay, Jack Costello, Joy Pearson, and Kaylin Schreiber. And they're all going to bring some pretty awesome people. And it'll be great. So thanks for having us, Patrick.
Well, I just wanted to ask, first off, if you could tell everyone your names again.
Oh,
so
sure.
They remember out there, because it's been an hour or so.
Oh, sure. Do you want me to tell them, or do you want them to tell them?
No, you can tell them, or they can tell
them. Okay, well, I can. That way we don't have to pass the microphone around. So we have Megan St. Marie, Nancy Deer, Sarah McKay, Lee Schetzlein, Keturah Carter, and Amy Tron.
And they were reading in that order. And does anyone have a show coming up other than the New Poet Challenge?
Yeah, does anybody have a show coming up?
I should know what day that is. I'm going to be reading in the April of Grief Rites.
So Nancy is going to be reading at...
Grief Rites. It's a series that's about many different kinds of grief. There will be, it's a monthly series, and I'm reading in its April version, which I don't actually know the date of.
But that's coming up.
Yeah.
And any other readings coming up, or?
And I know that Sarah and Nancy are both going to be Unchaste readers.
Oh, yeah.
In June. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that'll be, So that's exciting.
And I guess I mean we're running out of time,
but
we still got 3 minutes till Subhuman Intellect Theater. Do not say those initials on air. But there are like a bunch of other reading series in Portland too that I could just say that there's the Monday open mics at Sound Grounds. It's a show and tell gallery events. I thought I was gonna have time to plug that, but I guess I do. There's the Tuesday night readings. There's a ton of Tuesday night readings competing with you guys, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to remember if there's a Monday night reading at First Monday every month at Tony's Tavern. And right. I can't. And there's, I think there's some others. I can't remember.
Yeah. And Word Warriors is the first Wednesday of every month. I guess I can plug that one since I'm
yeah,
here.
Yeah, totally. And where is that?
Oh, it's at Common Grounds, which is at 43rd and Hawthorne, and it is going to be March 2nd, and we're going to have a really cool show with we're going to have some new poet challengers or challenge people who I don't know who those going to be yet, but we're going to have a double headline show with Melanie Fay and Paul LaPierre, and it's going to be really great. So they're two, Melanie and Paul are both two Native American poets here from, who live in Portland. And so that's going to be a great show.
And I'm trying to think if there's anything. I mean, there's a Michael Burton book release coming up on the 19th of February that unfortunately, I don't have the place, but that's coming up and people should check it out. Look for it online, and his book is going to be at Powell's, I believe, too, or at other bookstores. And there's the readings in Vancouver as well. And I'm trying to, there was another reading that you and Curtis were involved with, and I can't remember. Oh, Unchaste series. When's the next Unchaste series?
Oh, the next Unchaste is soon. It's the 17th, and it is going to be at the Sermon House at 5131 Northeast 23rd Avenue, and it's going to be multi-generational voices of Black women, and it looks like it's going to be a really good show.
Cool.
Yeah.
So
last year's was pretty amazing.
So. Yeah.
So there's a lot of really cool readings going on around town, and it seems like everything's kind of getting things are getting kind of diverse, which is nice. And and so we got about 45 seconds before Subhuman Intellect Theater. Does anyone have last words to say?
I think that the only thing I think I can say is that if you can't come to New Poet Challenge, you should definitely check out Pairings, because it is seriously the most interesting wine shop in Portland. So definitely check that out.
Okay. And, all right. Yeah. And I I'd like to thank all of you for coming on, and thanks, Amanda.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you.
All right.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Youth Summit, taking place February 12th and February 13th at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club in Portland. February 12th will feature a workshop called Healing Ourselves to Raise Our Future and a performance by spoken word artist S. Renee Mitchell. February 13th will feature workshops on topics ranging from becoming an MC to healthy living to information on going to Africa. That evening, the summit will close with a youth talent showcase. Again, that's the Portland Youth Summit, February 12th and 13th at the Blazers Boys and Girls Club, 5250 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at cabo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Clinton Street 3rd Annual Mardi Gras Festival, Tuesday, February 9th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. This annual celebration features the Les Blyke Mardi Gras films Dry Wood and Always for Pleasure,